Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
Hi, this is Pat Iyer, and today I have the pleasure of bringing to you Jason Tracy for this newest episode of Legal Nurse Podcast. Jason is a person who understands the healthcare world and the sales world and has had somewhat of a rocky course learning how to sell. Jason and I are part of a mastermind and have gotten to know each other. And as I've been talking to Jason, I realized that he has some valuable skills that will help you as a legal nurse consultant. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pat, for having me on the show. I'm super excited to be speaking to your group today.
I wanted to start off, Jason, by saying that, you know, when legal nurse consultants form their businesses, they come from a nursing background, a clinical background. Nothing has prepared them for language like closing ratios and closing sales and closing techniques and a variety
APIs.
Right. All kinds of words float around in the sales world. Why are legal nurse consultants salespeople?
Any entrepreneur is in sales. And I think that's one of the biggest motivating factors for me to start my business is I had spent 20 years in sales, and we'll get into a little bit into my journey here in a second. But so many people start a business because they have this passion, they have a purpose, they have an expertise, they have something that they can offer the marketplace. They see a problem or a struggle. The problem is they don't have that sales experience, or worse, they have their sales experience comes from in the form of sales stigmas and the negative connotations that there are to sales. 80% of businesses, not just legal nurse consultants, I don't know what your percentage breakdown is, but 80% of businesses fail within the first 5 years. And what I was seeing was it was all these people that were coming to me as I was having a lot of success in my career from a sales leadership aspect and resurrecting companies that were having these types of problems. They were in bankruptcy and whatnot, and being able to build up their sales organization. Sales will solve all your problems. I was in an organization that was completely bankrupt. There were millions of dollars in debt. Our sales allowed us to have time to restructure that debt. We paid off the debt, and then we became one of the top players in the industry. Without sales, you will die. You will be out of business, and you won't have a business anymore. So it's so important. It's so important to be able to embrace sales. To me, I know there's a right way to do it. And that's what I'm so excited about to share my message.
And you mentioned something a few minutes ago about it has a negative connotation. Why do you think sales has this cloud that hangs over it?
Because it's true. Most people do sales from a point of fear. And that is my story. I was a nurse's aide. I worked in a nursing home. I did that for 5 years, and I was paying my way through college, and I was at a point where I needed to make more money than there was time in the day. I grew up from a poor family, a single mom, and so it was all on me in order to go to school. And so I'm like, you know, I think I could be good at sales, and it doesn't matter how many hours there are in the day, because there's this thing called commission. And if I you know, if I'm really good at what I think I'm really good at doing, then I should be able to make a lot more money than there is time in the day, and I can pay for my schooling. So I had answered an ad in the newspaper that was looking for salespeople, and I ran out to this job interview, and they hired me within the first 15 minutes, and I was so excited. I'm like, I must be amazing. I must be amazing. So I went out and I burnt my bridges at the nursing home to make sure they'd never hire me again, because I'm like, I don't want to fall back. I know that if I got here and it's hard and I'm struggling a little bit, it'd be easy just to come back to the nursing home, and because I was good at that. And it was the reason why I did that, or I felt like this was something for me, is because I had great relationships with everybody. So if you look at the elements of a nursing home, there's always the inner wars between the dietary department and the laundry department, and the people are fighting. And for me, I had great communication with my fellow nurses' aides. I had great communications with the nurses. I was always the right-hand person for whatever nurse I had on my team. People were doing my job for me. It wasn't like I asked them to, but it was like just kind of this thing. I could get extra food from the dietary, or if something got messed up, I could go there and they wouldn't be all mad because I added more work to their plate. They would take care of me and take care of my patient, really, really well. And so I'm like, I feel like this is what sales is about. And so I should be really good at this. And so that's what I ran out and did. And then I got there and I got the first thing, my introductory to sales was my manager asked me, have you ever watched the movie The Boiler Room? And I had not. I don't know if any of you ever watched the movie The Boiler Room. It's a very entertaining movie with Ben Affleck in it and in Vin Diesel, one of Vin Diesel's first movies. But I watched it and these people are ripping people off. And the whole thing is about like telling people half truths and talking a big game and fast talking and using psychological tactics in order to trick people into stuff. And I'm like, is that what I'm doing? In every day I was taught to do these little tactics and say certain things, and there's going to be a proper word track, and there's going to be, you're going to put something in their hand and then you're going to rip it out of their hand because people hate fear of loss. And it was all this like stuff that just gave me anxiety, and I wasn't very good at it. And because of that, I got into a lot of financial debt. I had my car repossessed. I had eviction notices. I was having a lot. I couldn't sleep at night. And so it was just that struggle. And why I'm doing what I'm doing is because I was challenged by a sales manager of mine. I went to a job and this guy was actually pretty good at what he was doing, but he had gave me a challenge. He's like, I know you're new at sales. He's like, what you should do is go out and shop all the competitors and go see what other people are doing and take notes and steal their best practices, take tips and tricks, that kind of thing, and get better at sales because you can see what all the other good salespeople are doing. And I went out on this mission to find great salespeople. And I was extremely disappointed, Pat, because the world out there, it does not take much to be better than the average. And so what I was realizing is that there's just that difference. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the discoveries that I had, but I started to realize that the reason why I thought I'd be good at sales was being able to listen to people, being able to ask them questions and be curious and build those relationships. Those were the reasons why I was ended up being successful at sales and turned around what I thought sales was. It went from being that slimy, that slick talker to really serving at the highest level.
That's quite a journey, Jason, from nurse's aide to successful salesperson with a few bumps in the road between them.
Absolutely.
Well, give us an understanding, if you could, about what were the insights that you got that transformed you from that uneasy salesperson to the successful one?
The insights I got were, I would go walk into these different locations and I would see people thinking about themselves. They were thinking about their commissions. They were thinking about how they were going to eat at night. They were thinking about how they're going to pay their bills. They were thinking about how the sales manager is going to have a conversation with them at the end of the night because they weren't performing at their highest level, or they're going to be on a performance plan. They were so inward. And so when I'd walk into a location, there were a few things that happened. If I didn't look, because I was younger at that point, I was in my early 20s, and if I didn't look like a legit buyer, people would ignore me because they wouldn't want to waste their time on me. I'm not going to buy their car or buy whatever it was that I was shopping at that point. Or that's their assumption. And so they make this assumption and they turn their back to me. Or they're telling me all about why I should buy this product or this service because all the features fit the bill and, you know, they like this and they like that. And they're basically taking a bunch of crap and throwing it at the wall and hoping something sticks. Nobody was taking the time to get to know who I am. Nobody was asking me, what are you looking for? What's your goal? Why are you here? You know, what's going on in your life? Nobody was asking those questions. And so that's what I took back and ended up at the very beginning implementing my process, especially because I didn't have confidence. I was, like I said, I was going through a repossession at the time. I was going through eviction notices. I didn't have a lot of money. I didn't see myself as a really successful salesperson. And so I sat back and I just started asking people questions. I started getting really curious about who they were, who this person was in my life, and how can I, with what I'm doing, how can I make their life better? How can I serve them? And so that was the beginning of it, was just being super curious of people. And as I sat back, it was just something completely different than what I was seeing in the marketplace. People were opening up. They were having conversation with me. And I'll tell you what, communication wins every single time. When you can really understand the root of somebody else, somebody's problem, and you know you can solve it, it makes that transaction, that interaction so much easier.
I'm going to interject. Enjoyable. Yes, and enjoyable. I'll interject with sharing a story of what happened to me when my husband was in charge of the sales department for a bimetallic cylinder company. And every year he got a company car. And I remember walking into our local car dealer, carrying my infant son in my arms. And my purpose was to help him pick out the next car he was going to get for his company. And when the salesman saw me walking in carrying my baby, I got everybody's back turned to me. So finally, somebody came over to me and said, "May I help you, ma'am?" Like clearly thinking this is a loser of a client. And I explained what I was there for. And all of a sudden, I watched his face transform from dismissal to respect. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow. Just, I got treated differently because clearly I was a qualified buyer when before I was a woman carrying a baby.
Yes.
So that's one story I wanted to share. And also to pick up on something that you said, when legal nurse consultants get calls from attorneys and they are perhaps in a slower time or they're getting experience, there's a strong temptation to come across as needy, not even thinking about what can I help you with? Let's get started. How do you temper that anxiety about bringing the work in with what you just said about focusing on the client?
It's a practice that I do every single time I have a conversation. Before I go into that conversation, and it could just be a collaboration call, it could be a connection call, it could be somebody that I'm meeting for the first time, it's having that conversation of be curious. I literally give myself a pep talk because it's so easy, even though I've had a lot of success with doing sales in this way. And then I've taught so many other people how to do this. It changed the face of an organization that was bankrupt and transformed it into the top in the industry. And then now coaching entrepreneurs individually and helping transform their businesses. It really works, but I kind of lost which direction I'm going in. What was the question?
We're talking about how you tamp down the tamp. That's not a word, is it? You dampen down the neediness when you're having a conversation with a prospect so that you don't come across almost pleading to get the work.
Yes. So slowing it down and reminding yourself that other person is a person on the other line. And so that's the conversation that I have with myself each and every time, because I had success with the system, so much success. But then I started my business and I was creating new products and services. Now all of a sudden I'm selling myself and all of a sudden I'm worrying about, how am I going to make money? Am I going to be able to feed my family tonight? Am I going to be able to pay my bills? And I caught myself that I was literally for the first 6 months of my business trying to fit every square peg into the round hole. I was trying to oversell myself. I was trying to, you know, bring in all the graphics and all the stats that show how important and big I am. Guess what? Nobody cares how important and big you are. they only care about themselves. And that's just human nature. And so if you can get somebody on the other line talking about themselves and talking about their challenges and what's going on in their life, and you can listen, God gave us two ears and one mouth for a reason. And I think a lot of salespeople ignore that. Ask a question and then truly listen to their answer and hear what's going on. And this is where the majority, I call my system Be the Difference, because most people are not truly listening. They might even ask good questions, but they're not listening to what those responses are. And those responses are absolutely gold, because you will find people's pain. You will find how you can solve their problems. And it makes selling and closing, everybody talks about ABCs and closing is such a big deal. Closing should be the absolute easiest thing, because you heard exactly what's going on and you can then position that, hey, this is how I solve your problem. This is my recommendation to you. This is what we would do. This is how I would serve you. But take all that nervousness away and don't worry about edifying yourself. Don't worry about like that you're on the stand and you're being asked questions. Your job is to find out about them. And once you get them talking about them, your nervousness goes away.
I think that's a great point, Jason, because in particular, I think given the nature of the business, attorneys are always being sold to, and they get a little suspicious by talking to somebody who says, I can do everything for you. Just give me the work. No problem. I can do it. This false confidence that can mislead the attorney. In every field, there's a lot at stake. In the litigation world, there are hundreds of thousands of dollars at stake in out-of-pocket costs, particularly for plaintiff attorneys. So they don't want somebody taking their work in who's not going to be qualified to do it. And they've been burned somewhere along the way by just that scenario, that eagerness, that anxiousness to get the work that can stretch the truth or the capabilities of the nurse who's talking to the attorney. How do you respond to that?
What was the question again? How do I respond to what?
What are your thoughts about what I just said?
So how people respond as far as when they're, it's being the difference. Like you said, lawyers are being sold to all the time. When I have conversations with people, when I book my meetings now, people, I'm not going into it feeling with the main objective of I'm going to sell you. My main objective is to understand, what is this relationship? Is this a collaboration? Is it a strategic partner? Am I contacting you because I think we could be good friends, or you could be a mentor for me? Or is it a client situation? Can I serve you? Can I help you? Is it a referral partner? What is this opportunity? It's something, you know, so I don't go into anything thinking this is a sale. In that right there, I book 99.9% of my meetings. People don't stand me up. When they can't make their meeting, they let me know that they can't make it and they reschedule. Because I'm coming at them from a different way. I'm not sending them the email telling them about how I can solve all their problems before I've ever met them. I don't know them. I don't know if I can solve their problems. You know, so the only way I know if I can solve their problems or help them is if I meet them and we have a really in-depth conversation. So I understand where they're coming from, where they've been burnt in the past. You know, that's a big one. Understanding that lawyers have been burnt in the past. Tell me about a time that you've worked with a legal nurse consultant and it didn't turn out well for you. Or I sense, Pat, that you've been burnt in the past. You know, you've had a bad experience with a legal nurse consultant. Tell me about that. And let them tell you about that, because then that's all your evidence. That's all the stuff that you need. Are you better than that or are you not? And so when you can take and you can position that, hey, you know, Pat, you told me you had these things happen. This is how we assure that this doesn't happen. This is how, when we work with you, we do these things and then this doesn't occur and we get this result. But you're using their words and their experiences. You're not just throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall and hoping that something lands and something resonates with them.
Yes. Yeah. And when you use their words, it shows that you are listening, that you are caring, that you understand.
Yes. Which makes you, I call it Be the Difference, because this comes up all the time. It's so much different than what 85 to 90% of the people they're going to interact with, are going to interact the other way. They're going to talk over them. They're going to tell them about their product and services and why they're the best and why they need to go with them. most people are not truly listening in using their words, in using their experiences. And so that creates and separates you right there. Just use that. If you don't do anything else that we talk about, just go into these calls with exactly that mindset and you will land more business, because people are going to say, wow, it's like, I feel like you listened to me. And people are going to say it. I've had people say it to me over and over. I've had people say it to my clients and the people that I've mentored that, wow, you're different. Wow. I had this guy gave me a testimonial video last year and he was so pumped up. He landed the biggest deal of his life. He landed a $20,000 client, which was unbelievable to him at that point. And he was like, and they complimented me at the end. The guy told me, I didn't even know that you were selling me. He was like, this was such a pleasant experience. I actually had a really good dialogue with you. And that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be.
That just tickles me. Wow.
It tickles me too, because I get to see his response. And it's like, I love it when a plan comes together, because some people I'm coaching and they don't understand. It's hard for them to move, to leave those sales stigmas. It's hard for them to leave that fear, especially when they've never done sales before. They're legal nurses are an expert in places that I'm not, you know, but to then have these conversations figured out and have to be able to sell themselves. How do they do that? They've never done that before.
Yes, that's a great point. And I'd like to ask you another aspect of selling, which is the use of stories. I shared a story about being dismissed in the car dealer. You've used the stories, a couple of stories about getting used to sales and getting over some of the humps and going to the dietary and getting extra food for your nursing home residents, which I know our nurses are going to remember. Tell us about using sales stories to help establish rapport or connect with a person that you're talking to. Give us some insight about how it's important and how you use stories.
I'm going to use an example because I just came from a session with a client, and I'm using his story because he was in a delicate situation, and we coached him around this last week. He's in a delicate situation with a client where he knows they're going on a performance plan. They're a low performer, and he's been told by this company's vendor that the person that hired him is the weak link and is the bottleneck for their company. But this guy's the guy that's paying him. And so he knows these things are going on. The guy who hired him and is his, you know, major client is giving him the directives of what to do, doesn't know what Chris knows. He doesn't know that Chris knows what he knows. And so he was trying to figure out, how do I have this conversation without getting him upset or making him feel like he's, you know, he's got a target on his back. And so I'm like, let him know what you do. And so we started it off just by telling a story, and we told a story. He told a story to this gentleman about his client, one of his other clients, and what he does for that client. And he's going to ask him a series of questions to understand what's going on in his business so he can help him make his job easier and perform better for the vendor so they can keep this big chunk of business. It is very important for the company. But in order to get this guy to drop his guard, he told a story about his other client and where they were when he found them. And they were in the same place that this guy's in. And so it's not embarrassing. It's something that Chris deals with and he specializes in. He takes companies that are on the verge of being on performance plans and he helps them market and put their process together to where they're landing more clients. And so he told this story and the guy instantly dropped his guard because he didn't feel like he was the only one that was failing. He felt like Chris was now had his, you know, had good credibility because he's been doing this with other clients. And so he was able to then share everything that was going on with him. When you tell a story about your experience, it helps them, it helps paint the picture, it helps them understand how you can be of asset to them.
And bringing this into the legal nurse consulting world, it is something that you become better and better at as you work on more cases, because you can say, I worked on another case involving a rear end collision with a man who herniated 3 discs in his lower back. And this is how we approached it. And this was the outcome. It sounds like your case is similar. Here's how I could help you with your case.
Yes. Here's another big one, though. Your biggest sale you're ever going to do in your life is to yourself.
Mm.
You've got to sell yourself before you're ever going to sell anybody else on purpose. As you're doing that, I have a client the other day that she called me up because she was having imposter syndrome because she was about to quote this guy a price that was really, really high. And she was coming out of a job where she was being paid $15 an hour. And she now has this business where she's crushing it. But this to charge this price was giving her anxiety. And so she was like, I feel like I'm an imposter. I feel like I'm not worth that. However, I knew she just had this event over the weekend that was doing exactly what she was quoting this guy that she was going to do for his company. And she was telling me at the beginning of the call how amazing it went and how impactful it was and how people in the training were crying and their lives were changed. And so I went back to her and I said, Sparkle, tell me that story again. Tell me what happened on Saturday. And so she got really descriptive and she was telling me all about it. And I was like, well, what's the difference? What does it matter if it's you or if it's somebody else? And she's like, oh my God, the coach makes all the difference. Like whoever, the person that comes in, I hold the space and I meet people where they're at. And, you know, so she's telling me all the reasons why she's worth this price. And I'm like, so are you worth the price or are you an imposter? She sold herself through her story. All I did is ask her questions to make her realize what's going on. So if you're ever another writer downer, I have a friend that calls them writer downers. This is a writer downer. If you're struggling with imposter syndrome, if you're struggling to pick up the phone and make a sales call, if you're about to go into a meeting with a lawyer and your confidence is shaken and you're worried about what's going to go on, think about how you've impacted another case. Think about how you impacted another firm because of what you did. Think about what they said about you. Think about how they said it was like working with you. Think about all the successful stories. Like what would have happened if you wouldn't have had that conversation with them? What would have happened to their case if you weren't there? Tell that story to yourself and use the really good examples of ways that you made such a positive, incredible impact. Because then going into that conversation, you're going to remember that story. Your confidence is going to be on high. And you can probably then even share that story to the person you're talking to, to let them know and to validate you.
That's a great point, Jason. And I think it's something that is prevalent as people are building their businesses and they're gaining their confidence and they have to address those mindset issues. But it never ends. The first time that nurse walks into the courtroom to testify as an expert witness, and I've coached a lot of legal nurse consultants in that situation, is to remember that they know more about medicine than anyone else in the room. Okay. And you can go along developing experience and confidence, and then a new situation comes up. You have to testify in federal court where everything is very strict, very fast, very stern. Atmosphere is very different than the lower state courses, which tend to be a little bit more casual. Or you walk into a 20 attorney firm and you've only worked with solos and two or three attorney practices. So that little voice, that little imposter syndrome, that little doubting voice can crop up in a variety of ways. And I think you brought out the importance of recognizing that you're doing that to yourself and some strategies for overcoming that by regaining your confidence.
Mm-hmm. Tell the story. The other thing, the cool thing the story does is like it helps you understand who are your favorite clients. Is there a certain kind of lawyer you like working with? Is there a certain kind of law that what helping that find down and if you're telling that story on social media and you tell a story about how you served a client, it helps people understand who it is exactly that you're working with, who it is that you're serving and how you're serving them.
Exactly. You brought out a lot of aspects of sales, and I know that we've only scratched the surface in our podcast today. How can our listener find out more about you and the services that you offer?
Yeah, so they can go to my website, www.roar.consulting. And that's, you'll find resources, and I have all kinds of podcast videos up there for entrepreneurs, specifically entrepreneurs going through the same journey and struggle that we're all going through. And so there's amazing resources there. Plus, you can see my services and all that good stuff. Plus, I'm very active on social media, LinkedIn especially. So if you're on LinkedIn, reach out, connect. I send messages to everybody I connect with because it's all about that relationship. And so connect with me there. Facebook, YouTube, you can find me on all the socials, but mainly LinkedIn and my website.
And I'm curious about the name of your company, Roar, yeah. R-O-A-R. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came up with that name?
So I've always had an affinity with lions, the whole leadership thing, loyalty. There's a whole lot that goes into it. But we started talking about eat faces earlier, and you asked me about what eat faces is. And a few years ago, before I started my business, I had one franchise. Our company had one franchisee of the year, and we were out in Chicago celebrate, or this convention out in Chicago, and we won the award, and we were out celebrating that night, and we were going out to bars in Chicago, and I had my whole leadership team with me. They came to the event, and because we won, all these other franchise owners from the system were hanging out with us that night, and the president of the company was with us, and everybody was hanging out. And this one particular owner of a franchise out in New England was telling me about all the reasons. He was telling me all the reasons why he wasn't us. He was like, the franchise sucks. You know, the franchise that we're a part of, they gave us all a bunch of promises. They told us that they were going to help make us successful. They were going to plug in. They were going to do this. They're going to do that. They were going to help me make millions of dollars. The vendor that we have, all they care about is if we're successful. If we don't sell anything, then we're dirt to them, and they don't care about us. They don't give us support. My employees, all they do is steal from me. It was just one after another. And I got really tired of it because, my story is I went through the same exact thing as him. What he was saying wasn't a lie. What he was saying was true. The vendor does only care about you if you sell. The franchise did make a lot of promises. I think if you've ever been in a franchise system, you understand that franchises are selling you and they're telling you everything that you want to hear. And then you get there and you realize that they're half truths. So I said, Eric, man, you've got to accept the responsibility. Nobody is sitting here. Nobody ever said, I want Jason Tracy to be successful. I think Jason Tracy should be franchisee of the year. Nobody ever said that. And if I would have sat on my hands and knees and just waited for somebody to come along, I'd still be waiting here. And I'd probably be saying the same things you're saying. You know, I'd probably be saying all the reasons why I'm sitting here and I'm a failure and I can't figure it out. However, I know that I had to go and make it happen. And if it comes down to whether I'm going to eat or my people are going to eat or we're going to starve, I'm a lion that eats faces. I'm going to eat faces to make sure that I protect myself and protect my people. And so that was kind of where the whole eat faces thing came. And it probably would have died there. But the leadership team was there, and we're in this loud, crowded bar in Chicago. It's so noisy that I'm yelling, you know, so this guy can hear me. And I'm telling him, you know, like, yeah, the vendor only cares about you if you have success. Guess what? I went out and I found out what the vendor wanted. They don't make it hard. They tell you exactly what they want you to do. And so I figured out a way to do it. I figured out a way to serve my clients in order to hit their numbers and their goals. And guess what? They give me money and kickbacks that they don't give you. So not only are they caring about my success, but they're going above and beyond to make sure that I'm successful and they're giving me resources. If you go out there and you make it happen. So eat faces. As soon as I said that, the whole bar got quiet. My whole entire leadership team heard me yelling at the top of my lung, I'm a lion that eats faces. And so my whole team went crazy. They took it back. They made it their rallying cry for the next year. We ended up having a better year that year than we had the year that we won franchisee of the year across the country. And then when I started my business, it was one of those things of plugging into clients. And so what's eat faces? Eat faces is persevering in spite of the circumstances. That's what that means to me. There's always going to be circumstances. Look at COVID. You know, if you're networking or you're meeting people and you're face to face and you're doing these things, all of a sudden for 18 months, your way of building your business is completely gone. I know I was a small business. I serve small businesses. I'm coaching small businesses. All of a sudden when my clients are getting shut down at the beginning of the pandemic, I'm like, I'm going to starve. What's going to happen? Mm-hmm. But I looked for the good. Okay. All this stuff's going on. These business owners are are panicking, what can I do to help them? How can I serve them? And so that's what I plugged in and did. And then a really beautiful thing happened out of it is people realized they hated their jobs and they wanted to start their business that they've always dreamed of doing. And so then I was there in position to help those people go and do their things. And so find the beauty. There's always going to be a challenge or a circumstance that we can't control. Find that beauty. And so when I started my business, I left the company, I started my business, I was trying to figure out what to name my company, and I kept coming back to the lion. And then my leadership team got together and they got me this really cool book. And it was a book that had pictures of all of our experiences together. And they each wrote little stories and little paragraphs about what I meant to them. And they wrote a combined paragraph of everything that I meant to them. And they told me that they were, you know, they were able to empower their lives. And they said, at the end of the day, we're lions that eat faces. And I'm like, that's it. Roar Consulting. Like, not only is my voice loud and sometimes you can hear the roar in my voice, but all of it tied together. I'm like the lion. I believe that we all have beasts inside of us just waiting to become uncaged. And you listening, you might be one of those people that sales makes you really nervous, or sales. You can become uncaged to understand that that when you do sales the right way, you're going to be serving your clients at the highest level. And that beast is just waiting to be uncaged.
Well, on that high note, Jason, I think we have reached the end, and I bet you've got some hearts pumping listening to this.
I hope so.
Mine is. Yes, I can tell. And one of the strong messages is don't sit back and wait for attorneys to find you. Go out and look, throw out your net, make your connections, speak, be visible. Mm-hmm. Get on LinkedIn, look for those opportunities that are out there.
And listen, and throw this bonus out there. You'd mentioned before we went live how, you know, that one of the biggest frustrations is sitting and wondering after a conversation if they're going to get back with you, if, you know, what's going to happen next. Type deal. And, you know, maybe you get lucky and they call you back 6 months later and they say, hey, you know, that case that I was talking about. And they plug you in, or you just never hear from them again. Always end your conversation, always end your interaction with what's the next step? What's next? What's the next step in your decision-making process, Pat? When should I follow up with you, Pat? Mm-hmm. Ask that question because they're going to tell you, oh, you know what? We're still looking at a couple other things. So give me a call in 2 weeks, or it'll probably be about 2 weeks before you can hear back from me. Now that's your complete directive. They just told you that they're going to make a decision in 2 weeks. I'm calling them up on Monday and saying, hey, Pat, this is Jason. We talked last week or a couple weeks ago. You told me that you're making a decision. Just following up. How's it going? You know, what can I do to help you? What can I do to serve you? You know, so now you have your call planned out. Ask that next step and then think about it. When's the last time you've had a conversation with somebody and they said they ended the conversation with, so what's the next step? What are we doing next? Do you have any examples? Have you had anybody ask you this?
Yeah, I have had that happen to me.
What was your response? How'd it feel?
It forced me to move into that thought process of what is the next step? Am I considering anybody else? What's the timing? It pinned me down instead of pinned it being down. Sort of this vague concept of, you know, maybe we'll do something in the future.
Here's the reality. Sometimes you might not be the best person. Other times it's not even on you. Most people are not organized in a process. You could be talking to a lawyer that has no idea what the next step is. He has no idea what he's looking for. He has no idea when he's going to find the answer. That's just the reality in our human nature. When you ask, what's the next step? You're already providing value to him because it pins him down and makes him think, oh, what is the next step? Oh, well, you know, I guess you can call me next week and I'll have a decision. Or, you know, do you have any of maybe the next step is you need to follow up with a piece of information for them, or you're meeting again next week or whatever. The next step could be a lot of different things. But when you ask that, it makes them think, what's the next step? And you're going to land the next step. You may not have a rapport with somebody in one call, but if you can get a second meeting with them next week to talk further about the details, you now have a start of a relationship that's building because you're meeting with them multiple times. But you take control of that by saying, what's the next step? And people appreciate it. And nobody asked that question. So two things that we've said, three things I think I said to write down or to do. If you don't do anything else, end your call with, what do we do next? When can I hear from you? What next step? Is there something that you need me to follow up with?
Excellent.
Take control of that.
Thank you, Jason, for spending the time with us today. And thank you to you who's watching this program. Be sure to tell another legal nurse consultant about Legal Nurse Podcast. Check out the bundles of podcasts that are on our website on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com, where you can get the best programs that we've collated into a variety of topics. And be sure to come back next week for another show, new guest. Remember that when you are a legal nurse consultant talking to an attorney, there are some principles that Jason shared today about closing that sale that are cool things to work on and to try out. And you'll find as you go along that it becomes second nature to you. So check that all out and go to Jason's website and get more resources and tools. Thanks so much. This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. I have the pleasure of bringing to you Caitlin Williamson, who is an emergency department nurse, a legal nurse consultant, and an emergency department nursing expert witness. Caitlin, we just finished your podcast. What are some of the key points that we covered in your show?
We talked about how I returned to the place I was born and what drew me to emergency nursing. We also talked about the types of trauma that I see in my level one trauma center, the barriers to communicating with patients and the challenges that we might have. Also some of the violence that we see in the department and how we manage that and prevent that. Also looking at how our patient advocates work in our department and what their purpose is.
You'll be sure to want to catch Caitlin's show. We have a new appreciation of all of the complexities of working in the emergency department. Mm-hmm. That door could open and that baby could be, as Caitlin clarified for me, minutes old. I said, a couple days old, thinking that all babies are born in the hospital, right? Well, no, some babies are born in the parking lot, in the entrance to the ER, or in the resuscitation bay with mom just barely getting inside those doors. So you could deal with a minutes old baby to 100-plus-year-old person and have to be fluent in a variety of conditions and ages and medical and nursing needs, making emergency department nursing so challenging.
Yes, and rewarding. Challenging, but rewarding.
Yes, it is. You'll catch Caitlin Williamson's podcast on Legal Nurse Podcast. Be sure to get that show, listen to it, take notes, appreciate the skills that are involved in working in that type of setting. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.